Welcome to Building Conversations, a construction podcast powered by the STO Building Group. On today's episode, Brooks Rutledge, Vice President at Layton Construction, sits down with the project team who helped execute one of the most talked about projects in Nashville, the controlled implosions and transformation of Vanderbilt University's residential colleges.
Hello, and welcome to Building Conversations. I am Brooks Rutledge. I'm Vice President with Layton Construction here in Nashville, Tennessee, in one of my favorite places, my alma mater, Vanderbilt University. And we're sitting with some close friends today. And why shouldn't we be? We've been together for the better part of 6 years now. And in each of these folks is a member of the design and construction team here at Vanderbilt and responsible for the execution of one of the most unique projects, one of the most talked about projects, I would say, in Nashville history. And that is the residential colleges at Vanderbilt University. Kind of a full circle moment for us today. We're sitting in the Black Box Theater at Rothschild College, the second college completed by Layton Construction. Students are living here, although not yet. They'll be back here in just another week or so. But super excited to be here. And before we get into the details, though, of what was spectacular, what is spectacular about these projects, I just want to take a minute and let each of our guests, our team members here, introduce themselves. So, Sean, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thank you, Brooks. My name is Sean Farrell. I'm our construction manager. I've overseen the project from day one and been with Layton 8 years now. So this is definitely a career-topping project for me.
Mr. Grumman?
I'm Bob Grumman. I am team leader for capital projects at Vanderbilt University. I've played the role of project manager for this stream of projects. I've been here for 13 years, and I've been working on residential colleges the entire time.
My name is Megan Edwards. I'm an architect with Hastings Architecture Firm. 13 of the 19 years have been with Hastings, been practicing in Nashville, started with Zeppos Residential College, and am now managing the construction of Residential College C.
I'm Josh Stewart, senior superintendent with Layton. Actually, my entire time with Layton, save about 3 months, I've been here on residential colleges. Came here in December of 2019 and looking to finish it out next year.
And as I said, each of these team members just instrumental in the execution of these colleges. Megan, you mentioned Zeppos. Obviously, that's the first college named for former Chancellor Nick Zeppos. I kind of want to start with you, Bob, and just kind of you lay the context for today's conversation, lay the groundwork, talk a little bit about Chancellor Zeppos's vision for the residential colleges and the West End neighborhood beautification.
Okay. So the university made a decision in mid-2000s to start housing all of our students. We're a full residential university, so our students live on campus all 4 years. We wanted all of our students to experience a residential college, which gives them an opportunity to kind of live and learn 24/7. A professor lives in every one of the buildings and has kind of mentorship over 300 plus students. We started over on Peabody campus, which is where all the freshmen live. That was a really, really successful experience for us. And so we started evolving, and the students started asking, well, how do we do this after our freshman year? So we moved to Warren and Moore. We built it. Students were really, really happy with it. A couple years later, we moved into this project, which is four new residential colleges, all in this kind of collegiate Gothic style, which is what a lot of the Vanderbilt campus is and is about architecturally. So the chancellor and Miss Ingram got together and they kind of broadened their vision of how to carry out the residential college theme for all of our students. And so this next step was it. Four colleges, transformation of a neighborhood, and it's been wonderful. It's 1,300 beds across those four buildings, and the students and the faculty and the staff could not be happier.
You mentioned, there's four colleges. Obviously, Layton was retained for three of those, RCA being the first, subsequently named for Chancellor Zeppos. Yeah. As I said earlier, we're in Rothschild's now. That's the second college, and Layton is under construction for the third due to wrap early next year. students are coming in. Sean, you know, obviously Bob talked a little bit about the vision, but as it translates to scope and what Layton was retained to do, beginning, if I remember right, back in the summer of 2017, talk a little bit about scope and what that vision meant as it pertains to the bricks and mortar and, sure. and our job on site.
Sure. So you're right. We mobilized to the project site autumn of 2017, and our goal was to kind of figure out exactly what the obstructions may be related to an operating campus, which was one of our larger complex challenges. Along with the three buildings, we also redid the back, what they call the West End neighborhood. We took two streets out, we made them walking paths, and we brought in, from our central plant, we brought in all the heating and cooling water that was gonna feed these three buildings as part of what the university calls their Blue Sky Initiative. So there was some LEED related implementation there. But as far as implementing and getting going on the job, there was three things that we could think of that were gonna be the most challenging for us. One was the logistics are really tight here. And you know, Josh can attest to that. There's just nowhere to put any material. There's nowhere to really house any of the cranes or anything like that. So we had to really think through that. And then secondly was there was four existing dormitories called the Carmichael Towers that had to be taken down, and they had to be done in sequence to our buildings getting put up. So we had to deal with that as well. And we ended up imploding, which we'll talk a little bit about that later. But and then the third was, how do we ensure that we meet the demands of the dates? Because the dates couldn't move. The students were scheduled to move in at a certain time in August, and we had to ensure that that took place. So those were really the things that we looked the hardest at. When you get in bricks and mortar, it was a matter of writing the schedules to the end date and working backwards.
I remember the West End neighborhood, arguably as difficult as the colleges themselves.
Yep. I would agree. And I will say, Sean, you know, kudos to your team for every single summer, those buildings were ready to go.
Yeah,
right? There was never a doubt that we would open on time and our students would move in on time. And you're right, the West End neighborhood renovation was monumental. You talk about disrupting students' lives for 2 years.
Directly
through their houses. Mm-hmm. And but y'all were champions. I mean, you stuck to it and we learned an awful lot, I think, together.
We did, and we learned also our communication skills amongst all the parties, from Vanderbilt to communicating mainly to the students and the public. We really implemented some great programs that I think was instrumental in our success. I really do. So,
And we had the pleasure of working through COVID.
We'll
what's more fun than that?
We'll get to that in a minute. I know there was an awful lot of prep work done. Obviously, Sean touched on logistics and some of the complexities that, you know, as it relates to the construction of the colleges. And I'd be interested to know, and I know others would too. I remember taking a field trip to Yale as kind of, hey, let's go check out, you know, what they're doing up here and check out the residential college program at the Yale campus, you know, an Ivy League school in the Northeast, knowing what Vanderbilt's vision was for this campus. So that was some of our prep work. But, you know, from the Hastings side, you know, in trying to bring the university and Chancellor Zepos' vision to life, what were some of the things that you guys were thinking about as far as, you know, design parameters, programming, aesthetics? Where did you take your inspiration from?
Sure. So we had a design partnership with David M. Shore's architects out of D.C. They were heavily involved with the early stages of the projects, the inspiration, the scope. But a lot of that was pulled directly from Vanderbilt's campus. They have a strong architectural late 19th century, 20th century architecture style. So that set the tone for many of the building materials for the Gothic collegiate style architecture. Like you referenced, many trips made to other universities, pulling inspiration from their campuses.
Trips overseas at all? Did y'all make it across the pond to check anything out?
You remember?
When I think of collegiate Gothic, I want to go to places like Oxford and
Cambridge,
you know, those sorts of things, and certainly the Ivy League in the Northeast. I was just curious.
And that's certainly where the style gets its roots, right? In monasteries of the early Middle Ages. We're pulled a little more modern, a little more modern, a little more United States versions of it.
So specifically, I feel Alumni Hall, Kirkland Hall, a lot of Vanderbilt-specific projects set a lot of tone for the inspiration behind the materiality with the brick, the stone. All of that was incorporated into the initial design stages of the projects.
And there's no missing them as you drive by on West End, that collegiate Gothic style of architecture that is so unique, even to Vanderbilt University, but certainly unique to those of us that have been Nashville residents, a long time and remember the towers that stood in their place previously. Josh, from a, in bringing Hastings' vision to life and bringing the drawings, taking it off of paper and putting it into practice, what were some of the complexities that you faced, as a senior superintendent responsible to lead the field? What were some of the challenges and obstacles that you felt like, we had to overcome at Layton in order to make sure we got it right the first time? We didn't, compromise the end date and those sorts of things. Tell me about the pre-planning that took place and some of the, like I said, sidestepping some of the landmines that may have otherwise crippled us.
So I think first, just to kind of go back to Megan's work here, Schwarz gives a beautiful idea, and Megan has to work with, current codes, standards, Nashville geology, Nashville water patterns, metropolitan utilities, and just bringing their vision to life with all those factors playing in was just huge. And it does make some construction complexities as well. We're bordered to the north with West End Avenue, a pretty busy thoroughfare, right? 25th is, I think, the way every single person goes to and from work that works
seems like it.
On the medical side. So
when we're trying to take deliveries, that's exactly the way it seems.
That's where they're all coming from.
So really pretty busy. And then to the east, it was kind of a progressing border, right? When we started at Zeppo's, we had Carmichael to the east, whether it was students there or demolition ongoing. Then when we started Rothschild, we had Carmichael 1 and 2 to the east. And now we've got admissions building to the east. So we've been really locked in on all four sides throughout the project. So logistically, it's just been super challenging. You've got elevation changes throughout that you have to deal with through the course of construction. Crane placement, we can't just get as many as we want for budget and logistic concerns. So, just being strategic on crane placement, crane height. We had the tower element as well. So at some point I heard that we had the tallest freestanding tower crane east of the Mississippi River. It sounds
that's correct.
A little bit.
And the reason for that is the tower was 58 feet in diameter. So you couldn't tie a tower crane to the building structure.
Right.
It wouldn't sustain it. So yeah, we were able to find and encourage and endeavor to find and get a design where we could put the tallest freestanding tower crane in the southeast United States for a period of time. It was about a year and a half.
Right.
So, it was pretty neat. It was kind of a cool project. One of the things that you also have to kind of throw into the concerns mix here is Vanderbilt University Medical Center is directly behind us. Mm-hmm. And they have a flight route for their LifeLight, which they're the regional leader in LifeLight, bringing patients in and out that are critical. And they're right in our path. So we had to deal with the FAA on multiple occasions to ensure our tower cranes met the FAA requirements. And that may sound like a small order, but it turned out to be quite an endeavor that we were able to conquer. And it's just another testament to the entire team, Megan's team and our designers and us all working together to a common goal. So it just illustrates exactly what it took. And that's in a small sentence, just, wow, who would have thought you had to worry about flying a LifeLight over a building to building that's only five stories. So that's just something to look to and go, wow, that was an accomplishment. And
Josh, you didn't mention, there's all the construction hurdles you had to clear. There's also all the university hurdles you had to clear. Right? after LifeLight, then we have students living next door to every single one of your pieces of construction, every single one of them, which meant, you're not starting until 7 a.m.
Right.
at the earliest. Mm-hmm. And you're not really starting until 9 because we don't want you making noise until then. Right. And then we want you to close, so we want you to stop working on graduation during exam periods. Whenever there's some kind of function, we want you to stop working. If we've got something going on, we're like, well, you're making too much noise. You got to stop.
Right.
And so that's part of the joy of working on the campus. But it certainly is difficult when you've got a hard finish date to meet, to work around those obstacles.
You know, one of the things that I think also helped us and get through that and actually got better at it was when we developed that communication system, that program where we had what we called quarterly sit downs with the students. And we actually, and then we also developed a website that got published every week, and it showed our routing and what was going to be happening the following week so that the students and the instructors of those students had an idea of what to expect. And so that helped with the concerns of, even though maybe there wasn't any noise, there's always a concern they're going to make a bunch of noise. And when we started that and kind of got comfortable with that process, and the students got comfortable and the faculty got comfortable, I think that that really addressed a lot of those fears that come with construction and just general noise and dust and everything comes with it.
You all helped us establish that it's possible, that our rules were not unreasonable.
You're right.
That we were then able to apply to other sites across campus, which is because we can constantly point back and say, Layton has no problem doing that for us, so I need you to do it too, and that's been extremely helpful for us.
Well, it's nice that we can set the bar.
But I mean, sorry about the tires, but you know.
That's right. You know, you said a difficult place to work, and in some respects, I think you're right. It's simply given the fact that it's a place of higher learning, right? It's a heavily traveled campus, and you know, with a lot of ins and outs and protocols and regs and things that we need to abide by. Difficult, but I'm going to say desirable, right? I've lived in this town an awful long time, and I've been a contractor now for 22 plus years. I can tell you that there's not a contractor that doesn't want to be on this campus. I will assure you of that. And I know, you know, when Layton was given the opportunity to pursue the residential colleges, and even after award, our, you know, the thing with it we say all the time is we've got one swing. We don't have an entire at bat with this university. We've got one swing at the plate, and by gosh, we better hit a home run. We're not looking for singles or doubles. We're going to hit a home run, because if we're able to get on the campus and we're able to build and we're able to execute, then you know that obviously you're in good graces. But the building program here is robust, and it's that recession proof backlog that as a contractor you love to have in your in your repertoire and in your pipeline. You know, so complex and difficult, certainly, but I think with the right pre-planning, the communication, those sorts of things, you know, extremely successful thus far. I say planning, though, you mentioned a second ago, COVID-19, could not plan for that.
No.
You know, beginning, what, January, February of 2020, here comes the coronavirus, COVID-19, and construction got weird. Like it became much more difficult to build anywhere, but especially on a place of higher education. Josh, as far as some of the protocols and rules and regs that you know that we had to abide by here at Layton, talk about what a day in the life of construction and COVID-19 looked like on campus. At the time, we were wrapping the first college. We were wrapping
Zippos. That's right.
And had already begun construction.
We were on the home stretch to open up Zippos College in August. That's correct.
Yeah. So I guess it was what, middle of March, 2020, when you know everything kind of shut down one day. And thankfully, we were deemed, what was the word? Essential. We were essential employees. Didn't always feel that way at the time. But, you know, it was March. We had the building due in 4 months, 3.5 months, and we still had a long way to go. So I think we're at around 220, 230 workers on site each day. You know, with temperature scanners at the gate prior to, you know, for every individual coming in the gate, it was tough to keep up with. You know, it was still a little cold at the time. So the temperature scanner would be like 78 degrees. Okay, I think that's okay. That guy read 84, so that's not okay. So, you know, yeah, just like the rest of the world, we're just trying to, you know, feel everything out, make sure we're doing the right thing. You know, masks, everybody had to wear masks. We brought people in to sanitize all the surfaces weekly. And all just trying to figure our way through the world. That made it difficult as the summer kind of set in and the Tennessee heat and humidity set in. You know, we've got safety regulations that we need to follow as well. So, you know, even me, like, hey, do we do mask or glasses? Because I can't do them both. They're, you know, either fogged or, so it was a tough extra layer of things that we had to do. Now, on the flip side of that, without COVID, you know, I mentioned where we were kind of up against the gun. Without COVID and the traffic that I mentioned on West End and the traffic on 25th Avenue, without that turning into COVID traffic, I don't know how we finished the job. We kind of worked
unrestricted access.
Unrestricted access. Yeah. We could essentially do as much work as we wanted in each of those roads. You know, forklifts, that was kind of our last large elevation of masonry along the west side and the north side. A lot of landscaping to do on both of them. So without those, I don't know how we could have done it. We had a crane set up in the middle of 25th Avenue that we didn't have to run by Public Works. So it benefited us. I mean, it was very complicated. Now, when we got into the tower, again, it was summertime going into fall, still with masks, and we didn't have, you know, any great opportunities for material or manpower movement through the tower. So it was stairs, again, with a mask on our face, up and down all day long. So lots of curveballs, but we were able to handle them.
And for the record, how much weight did you lose during the construction of the West End Tower?
15 pounds.
15 pounds. I distinctly remember a Hydra pack underneath the safety vest.
Yes.
Every day, all day, because you were climbing stairs like a madman.
On my back. Every day.
You know, I'd point out, too, that we learned something also about ourselves. We adjusted. We worked with the university. Bob was, and the leadership at Vanderbilt was very conscientious of the challenges. So they encouraged and were very agreeable to us bringing on two full-time nurses who took temperatures every day.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they also approved all the expenditures related to sanitary cleaning. We actually got to the point we were sanitizing, I think, every other night. And we have one thing that we should be really proud of, and it's an unfortunate event with COVID, but we know of many of our sister projects around the community that literally shut down for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We only had to shut down for 2 days during the entire process over one long weekend. And it was only because we had spiked in positive COVID tests to like 9. I don't think we ever got over 9 when it came to that, because our testing process and kind of the program that we set in play with our subcontract partners, they were all engaging in it. So we were catching it before they came to site. And that was really the key. Because it spreads the way it spread. If you got it on site, it was going to spread.
Well, you've had on any given day, we had 350 to 400 men and women that were out there working. And, you know, I remember hearing, you know, the close proximity within 6 foot of how do you coordinate 350 to 400 people inside a building that's, you know, 230,000 square feet, and keep them productive, keep them active without, you know, the spread of COVID-19.
Correct.
Because schedule, as you said earlier, was not an option.
Right.
We could not compromise schedule, but we could also not compromise the safety and the health of those folks that were working on site.
Right.
We had projects across campus shut down. I mean, y'all were the lone contractor on site who didn't shut down for any, I mean, 2 days is a weekend, that's not really shutting down, but we had them shutting down for weeks at a time.
And it's important to point out that Vanderbilt University had a very stringent protocol.
Yep.
So it wasn't like we were able to stay open because it was a critical job. We stayed open because of everybody being involved in the process and protocols that we implemented and followed through on.
We had no intention of not having classes in August.
Right.
And we did absolutely everything we could to make sure that happened.
Right.
And it was incredibly important that everybody played from the same from the same page, whether you agreed with the page or not. That's the game we're going to play, and y'all got right in line and didn't hesitate.
Well, I think through communication and partnership with the university, we fared as best we possibly could through that time, despite the challenges. You know, one of the coolest, we'll call it a challenge, but one of the coolest things I think I've ever been a part of, especially having lived in the towers that used to grace this site, is the implosion, or actually multiple implosions. We blew up one tower, mechanically demolished another, and then we demolished both the same day via implosion. Seriously, one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of, ever seen. Yeah. But the amount of planning and the amount of, honestly, fear, at least in my side, I was terrified just based on proximity to West End, proximity to buildings that are 100 plus years old. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to think about when you're going to drop to, what were they, 12, 14 stories?
14 story
yeah. buildings simultaneously on the, 10 feet away from West End Avenue. Josh, once again, similar to West End Tower, you were instrumental in coordinating the effort as it relates to the implosion or multiple implosions. Tell us a little bit about that. I was blessed to get to watch it that day, but really, didn't play a role at all in planning it or carrying out the various, processes and protocols. Tell us a little bit about what especially the simultaneous double implosion, right. what that looked like, particularly from pre-planning to the day of.
Right. So it was, the preparation for an implosion isn't just plant some explosives and hit a button, right? There's a lot of pre-work that has to go into it, the first of which is getting all of the furniture and equipment out of the building, right? So I think students moved out the 17th of May. It was 2021. They moved out the 17th. We took possession of that building the 24th of May, 2021, and it was 60 straight days of 60-hour weeks with our demolition partners getting ready, tearing out walls, weakening structure throughout so that we can make those things fall. We did have, the Bellevue House, I guess one of the oldest structures on campus, was no more than 25 feet away. So protecting that, we did have West End. And then again, you're loading the building with explosives that I guess the wrong kind of people might want. So protecting businesses on the street, across the street, next to us, notifying campus. Once explosives started being planted in the building, we hired some off-duty police officers to guard, set up big light towers to watch the site each night, and then kind of moving into it. It was down to the wire, similar to we're not missing the date for kids moving in. It was we are not missing July 31st because, rescheduling is not a terribly easy thing to do. We're mobilizing Nashville Fire Department. We're mobilizing Nashville Police Department. We're mobilizing Vanderbilt Police Department, all of the resources, all of the departments within the university, notifying the businesses across the street, hey, you can't work today until noon. There was so many things that went into just getting everything organized that July 31st was, it was there. That date was looming. So we made it that morning. I mean, you said it was scary. I was super scared. And the news interviewed me before the implosion. I was not able to tell you as much about the preparation when they asked me that morning as I was just now. But that was a very nerve-wracking day. But, they both came down. They came down beautifully. We've got some great videos of that. And
when Nashvillians came out in droves,
they did,
that
they did.
Morning.
I brought my
event.
Children.
It was an event. Yeah.
After it was complete, my youngest asked if he could see it again.
Yeah.
there's one thing that we sort of overlook, and that was the first implosion. After we gutted the building, we had worked as a community service, if you recall, Bob. Mm-hmm. We worked with Nashville Fire Department, and they were able to come in and do what they call high-rise training for a high-rise fire before we dropped the building. So they had 5 days, I believe 5 or 7 days, where the firemen from all kinds of different departments throughout the city came and rappelled in and busted through doors and did all the kind of things that they've always wanted to be able to train for in Vanderbilt University. And with Layton working side by side, we were able to do that. Now, that was a real big community event. We actually, Layton received a specific citation from the chief of fire department for Nashville. So I thought that was a pretty neat thing that we could add to it, to the whole thing.
Bob, remind me, were there... I would say there's some nostalgia associated with those towers that have been mm-hmm. here since the mm-hmm. 50s. Did the university, what were the efforts as it relates to saving, whether it was bricks or I can't remember the things that the university did to kind of commemorate the fact that these towers had stood on campus for,
years? We collected bricks. We gave bricks away to folks who wanted them. And we kind of created a whole class of memorabilia for people who wanted to participate in either the demolition of them or have that participation extend into the new residential colleges. But it was an opportunity, and folks were very excited, and we got all kinds of emails and calls about, why are you doing this? Hey, I used to live in this floor. I used to live in that floor. And
we were so blessed that, you know, too, that I can remember the simultaneous implosion, the second, you know, or the last two towers, I should say. We received a whole lot of rain the night after. The day was gorgeous. The morning was perfect. Right. And we got rain that next afternoon. Right. You know, as far as getting some of that dust
got
out of
the dust,
there,
down.
Dust off the buildings, yep. Helped the cleanup effort was helped significantly by the multiple rainstorms the next day.
Right.
So it all went out. You know, it really did go off without a hitch. I guess as easy as any 14-story simultaneous implosions can. Never seen anything like it.
It was great. It was great. It a great event, and people loved going to watch it. And it was a Nashville thing.
Well, and I'm an owner of one of those bricks because this is a university so steeped in tradition, so proud of the culture that you've been able to develop over your many years. You know, it's a university rich in initiatives. Especially yeah, sure, of late, right? And that includes certainly, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. It includes sustainability. This is, I mean, especially as we hear about, you know, what's coming, you know, we can also talk a little bit about, you know, these colleges and sustainability effort associated with these residential colleges, where, you know, LEED certification was a non-conversation. It was going to happen.
So the university isn't necessarily interested in the certification. I mean, that's a nice plus, right? That's
right,
a bonus.
Right.
Generally speaking, the way we kind of set up our guidelines, we're going to get LEED Silver, right? Just by opening the doors, we're going to get that.
Right.
Megan and her team and you all and your team worked really hard to push that envelope for us. And we're extremely grateful for it. And when all is said and done, Zepos will end up with a LEED Platinum. The other two colleges will be LEED Gold, and the neighborhood is getting LEED certified, in terms of that initiative, yeah, the university is thrilled. It's a success. It's a big team success. A commitment to doing something that, you know, trying to meet a budget, and. You know, the first thing everyone wants to cut is, well, let's cut all the LEED stuff out. That's got to be outrageously expensive. And it's not. It never is. It's just, it's easy. That's an easy target. Y'all worked extremely hard with the designers to make sure that we got what we needed out of it. It's been fantastic.
What were some of the design parameters as it really, I mean, Bob's exactly right. I think, you know, at 100% CDs, you're there, right? You're at LEED Silver. You know, just by the very way in which Hastings and the design team members put this thing together and what the university requires. Mm-hmm. What were some of those sustainability features that were, you know, at Zepos, at Rothschild, and at RCC that Hastings was thinking about?
So specifically at Zepos, in the basement, there is a cistern that captures a lot of the rainwater and harvests it for use in low flow fixture reduction to reduce the indoor water use. So that was specific to Zepos itself. Across the board, careful choice of material selections, recycled material content, geographically located materials played an important part. You know, choice of lighting fixtures. But aside from the small moves in that regard, you know, the building design in and of itself, we didn't have large spanses of glazing. So, you know, it was pretty limited and really helped with the conditioning of the building. And like Bob said, Zepos received platinum, and the next two were striving for gold.
So with those cisterns, one of the other things that was made possible by the design, and was able to then incorporate the colleges and the neighborhood. We can collect the condensate and the rainwater and pump it back up to the plant to use for our cooling towers,
right,
which is a huge deal. I mean, we're a massive campus, and we cogen a lot of our utilities. Being able to collect that water and reuse it is phenomenal. And that ties back to
the neighborhood improvement, because that piping from your central plant, we came through the neighborhood, I don't know, I'm going to say around a half a mile.
Yeah, yeah.
8 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet underground. Mm-hmm. And that ties and feeds chilled water, and some of this cogen return water is coming from these buildings going back to the central plant.
And that's right.
Part of your blue, they call it your Blue Sky program, your initiative. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Let's go back to the neighborhood for just a second. I remember as a student here, there was an awful lot of asphalt. There was overhead power lines and low voltage lines. And I remember when my now wife, she was a student over at Peabody College, and I remember walking over to see her one day and just thinking, it looks totally different over here. Yeah. I mean, it's a very different campus here at Peabody than over there on the West End side. You can't say that anymore. It is arguably as beautiful, if not more beautiful.
Interestingly, the comments that I hear about West End neighborhood and the residential colleges, everyone's thrilled about the colleges. They're like, yeah, those are great. These are lovely buildings. The biggest transformation is that 10 acres of West End neighborhood where we removed all the overhead power, all the overhead data lines, all the squirrel runs, took all that out, eliminated all the parking, took all the asphalt out. We moved the dumpsters around so they were no longer just open containers out in the middle of the yard. I mean, it transformed the whole neighborhood.
Lovely smell.
Yeah, lovely. And on top of that, we made it all accessible, right? I mean, every single house now can get into without going upstairs. You can get all the way through the neighborhood without going upstairs. There are no obstacles. And that was a huge transformation. And it's probably the biggest transformation the university's had in a long time, being able to move from that kind of very car-centric, special neighborhood to something that's more knitted into the fabric of the university.
More pedestrian pathways.
Yep.
Is that the plan? What are the university's plans as it relates to Central Campus and some of the upcoming projects? Specifically, the West End neighborhood, is the plan to continue to transform the university in that regard from a standpoint of the beautification of the...
It's a university campus. We're always looking to evolve and improve, and we're going to. And as we come across things that we need to update, we're going to. And we're looking at different. We've got five big kind of districts on campus, and West End neighborhood, I wouldn't say is done, but it's had a lot of attention, and we're now kind of looking towards Central neighborhood, and we're looking towards the academic core of campus. We've got ongoing projects in the athletic neighborhood, so we've got plans for everywhere. We always do. We always have. But West End neighborhood, this has been a really nice ribbon to wrap around this part of campus, and give the students a place that's a home and that gives them this is Vanderbilt. This is the way it's supposed to be.
Well, I can speak on behalf of Layton when I say I hope we're a part of those plans. We really, really want to be a part of those plans. We've enjoyed very much the past 6 years working in partnership with the university, with Hastings Architecture, a firm that we have a tremendous amount of experience with, and certainly folks like Sean Farrell, Josh Stewart, and a giant team, working hard every day to execute. We're ecstatic to be here, and certainly excited for the future on campus.
Yeah. Good. Well, let me add something that you touched on really briefly, but it's something that is really, really important to us. And you guys have been a game changer for us, and that's getting diversity into our construction projects.
Glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Right. Nashville can be a challenging market. There's a whole lot of firms that have been here a really long time, and they're all buddies with each other, and they all tend to work together. And that tends to limit other people's ability to get into the market and participate in a meaningful way. And that's true across campus, right? Absolutely across campus. Across the city, that's true. When you all got here and we started measuring, right? We're like, well, what? How are we doing? How is diversity working across our construction projects? Because that's a relatively easy thing to measure. And I think we started and we're 2%. It was no number to be proud of. I mean, it is what it is. But we approached you all and said, look, we really want you to lead this charge for us, right? A lot of folks are having a very difficult time making any meaningful progress for us in diversity on our projects. And they're giving us all kinds of reasons why, none of which we believe. But they keep giving us the same reasons. And we need you to prove that this is not true. And y'all were willing to do it, right? I mean, Zepos, we got started kind of late. Residential College B or Rothschild, this one, you guys started pushing the envelope for us and we got up to 10%. Right. We were like, okay, that's pretty good for a project that, you know, where we didn't, we were already kind of halfway down the road and y'all tackled it. We got to C, which is the one we're under construction now, and it'll finish in May, June, somewhere around there. We're at 30%, and that's huge. And now we have the ability to tell our other contractors, Layton did it. Just like they did at COVID, just like they've done meeting our deadlines. Layton can show you how to do it. And we're happy to talk to them and have them explain it to you, or you can figure it out. But it's really important to us. And we're so proud that you have been able to do it on a big, meaningful project for us. You know, we've got $124 million job and we hit 30% on diversity. And it's fantastic. It's exactly the kind of thing that we need to have happen, that we want to have happen, that we know is possible. And we're happy about it.
So. For us, to end on that, we're super excited about the fact we get a lot of feedback. Josh gets it in the field. I hear it at my position. The local folks that now are involved at Vanderbilt, who were always thinking for years, I'll never be able to work at Vanderbilt because I'm just not big enough. I don't have the abilities. I don't have the connections. And this diversity endeavor has offered that.
And it's meaningful subcontractors.
That's correct.
Who are participating. It's not
their heart's in the right place.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right. I mean, they're, you know, the big contractors are teaming up with the little guys, giving them a chance, bringing them on board. You guys are working with them, making it happen. And like I said, it's meaningful. It's meaningful additions. Right. It's not the little, okay, that's a garbage sub. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just hire them. It hasn't been that. And it's wonderful to see it and to just know that the university is grateful that that's happening. So.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. And to Sean's point, we're so proud of that effort, proud of that initiative, long overdue.
Yeah.
But super excited for what the future holds.
Yeah. Good.
And with that, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. And look forward to the next time.
Had fun. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more episodes like this, you can find Building Conversations on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audible, YouTube, and the STO Building Group website.